Before Dr. Krishna Chandra begins his first surgery for today, let's take a good look at the problem he will be removing. This is in your files, and the Krishna kills the demons. We're looking at number 19, Keshivara Leela. Krishna's pastime of killing the demon, who had assumed the form of a huge horse, represents freeing the sincere devotee from the illusion of considering oneself a great devotee or acharya. Such illusion produces material pride and the tendency to lord offensively over others. This illusion must be carefully given up. Keshi, a demon in the form of a horse, personifies the practitioner's conception of being more expert than others in devotional service. When he comes to Braj, he creates a great disturbance. As a Vaishnava gradually begins proclaiming his own superiority, a mentality of disrespect for the Lord arises, and the devotee falls from his position. Therefore, it is most important to prevent this evil mentality from entering the heart. Even if one is expert in devotional service, a Vaishnava will never give up the quality of humility. If one does so, then there is a need for killing Keshi. So what we're finding with many of these analyses by Bhaktivinoda Thakur is that they're very pregnant with meaning. And it's very difficult in the short time that we have, even if we do go over 2 hours of the time, it's very difficult to actually deal even with a little section of the purport that we're talking about. So we're not going to try and deal with all of this, but there's 2 sentences that particularly caught my mind. We want to consider this idea of illusion, the illusion of considering oneself a great devotee or acharya, and the fact that such illusion produces material pride and the tendency to lord ostensibly over others. And the other aspect that we want to look at is even if one is expert in devotional service, a devotee will never give up the quality of humility. If one does so, then there is a need for killing Keshi. So it's these 2 things that we will basically be focusing on in our discussion today. So it's very obvious when we're looking at this Keshi demon that he doesn't have any idea of Sambandhagyan. Because the basic principle of Sambandhagyan is Krishna Nityadas. He doesn't recognize that. I'm a great devotee, I'm a great acharya. His concept of being servant is not there. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he expands this principle even further. He's talking about servant of the servant. And Prabhupada, he makes things very, very practical and very, very clear for us in his Krishna book, where he says, so a Krishna-conscious person knows that he is always the servant of the servant of Krishna. He adds, he is most insignificant. And whatever good he does is by the grace of Krishna and the spiritual master. So he gives us a very rounded idea of the way that we can avoid falling into this Keshi trap.
Where is that?
That's from the chapter Vijayadhara Liberated. In this book, it's 327, page 327. It's the para that starts, one should note here. But it's a very... Yeah, sure. A Krishna-conscious person knows that he is always the servant of the servant of Krishna. He is most insignificant, and whatever good he does is by the grace of Krishna and the spiritual master. That's a very powerful little statement that he's making there. So why is Prabhupada guiding our mindset in this way? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given us the goal of Krishna Prem. So what's the relevance of the way that Prabhupada is guiding us? Why is he doing this? So I want to have a look at what Sanatana Goswami has to say about this. It's highly relevant. And at this stage, we'll give you all the handouts for the Keshi Demon so that you can just... And they're in order, so you'll be able to just flip through them as we move on. Did I give mine out by chance?
No, just
oh, I'm sorry, yeah, that's... Sorry. Okay. So let's first Hear about the role of mercy in attaining Krishna prema.
How pure love for Krishna develops. The prime cause of pure love for Sri Krishna is Krishna's full mercy, which is someone may arise spontaneously and in someone else's by gradual practice of devotional service. Just as from a generous donor, one might receive food already cooked or the means and ingredients for cooking food oneself, so according to the opinions of scripture, one receives Krishna's mercy through a method of devotional practice. Purport. Though all perfection in bhakti comes only by Krishna's mercy, there is still a need for different methods of sadhana. To illustrate the point, we may consider the hungry people who should receive charity. Some should be given food already cooked and offered to the Supreme Lord. Others, like strict brahmanas, who eat only what they have cooked themselves and offered to their own deities, should be given rice, other ingredients, and pots and fuel for cooking. Similarly, most aspiring Vaishnavas need to be purified from material contamination by regulative devotional practice. Only a few souls already pure can enter directly into spontaneous loving service. Once one has overcome the obstacles on the path that arise from frailties like fear, one can then achieve pure love in which one thinks of the Lord like a close friend in the ordinary world. For this, one must have a strong desire to serve the Lord in the manner of his gopas and gopis. One develops that love by practicing the devotional service, whose main ways are meditation on and singing about the many Vraj pastimes of the Lord. That service becomes brilliant by Sankirtan of the Lord's most beloved holy names. Vedi Sadhana Bhakti, which consists of 9 basic devotional practices, beginning with hearing, chanting and remembering, prepares a devotee's heart for the awakening of prema, love of God. Dhyan and Gan, the general methods of remembering and chanting about the Supreme Lord and his pastimes, transform in the advanced stages of sadhana into prishtha, nam sankirtan, ecstatic absorption in the nectarian names of one's worshipable Lord. This sankirtan is the most essential means for achieving prema. By nam sankirtan, one easily realizes the full glories of Krishna and his pleasure potency. In the company of people whose only taste is for devotional service is pure love, that love appears of its own accord. Yet one must try hard to keep it concealed. When one resides always in seclusion in the land of Lord's favorite pastime forests, surely such love will soon develop and mature. Sadhana bhakti performed in Krishna's holy dham is especially conducive to the awakening of prema.
So Sanatana Goswami is making it very clear that Krishna's mercy is the key. So then the question arises, how do we attract that mercy? We've spoken about this before, that mercy flows down, doesn't flow up. So this is a clue. Let's read what Sanatana Goswami has to say. It's on the other side of this first handout.
The role of humility in attaining Krishna prema. Loving devotional service is far different from disciplines such as karma, jnana and yoga. At every stage, it is decorated by indifference to them and its root is dainya, utter humility. When one allows secondary means and goals to become prominent, one deviates from bhakti. The most essential support and a candidate for pure bhakti must always take help from it is utter humility. An intelligent person should carefully cultivate speech, behavior, and thinking that fix him in utter humility, and anything that stands in the way of it, he should avoid. Dhanya at its most exalted comes forth when prema, pure love of God, reaches full maturity, as it did in the women of Gokul when they were separated from Krishna. When dhanya fully matures, prema unfolds without limit. And so we see dainya and prema acting in a relationship in which each is both cause and effect. Yes, prema is the final goal, but dainya is not altogether different from prema. Dainya is an integral component of prema, and both foster one another. Without utter humility, the pure love that leads to entrance into Golok will never arise. And until you attain that world, you will never be at peace. Dainya, Dainya, transcendental unconditional humility, is the most important prerequisite for gaining eternal residence in Golok.
Okay. So we're getting some very clear ideas of why this humility is important. I want to have a look at it in terms of something Prabhupada said. It starts to take us into another discussion, dependence on the spiritual master. Yeah, let's read that first in a bit.
My spiritual master is always with me, Pachicharu Swami. When Prabhupada first went to Mayapur with his American disciples, they drove straight to our ISKCON land, there without stopping at the Gaudiya Mutt, Chaitanya Mutt, or Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's Samadhi. Some of Prabhupada's god brothers commented, he didn't even stop at his spiritual master's Samadhi. When Prabhupada was told that they were speaking like that, he commented, do they think that I'm ever separated from my spiritual master, even for a moment? My spiritual master is always with me.
Okay, we'll stop there. We want to just look at this mood of Prabhupada. The feeling of the Guru's presence, for dependence on Guru and his presence. Now let's have a look at the benefits of that. Would you like to read the next page, the back of that page?
A prayer to the pure devotee.
Listen very carefully to this because it gives you a lot of clues.
O Vaishnav Thakur, please give me your mercy now. Then only will my false ego go far away. If I think I am a Vaishnav, then I shall look forward to receiving respects from others. And if the desire for fame and reputation pollutes my heart, then certainly I shall go to hell. Renouncing the false conception that I am a guru, I will understand myself to be your humble servant. I will sincerely worship the remnants of your food, O pure devotee, as well as the water that has washed the sacred dust of your lotus feet. By giving others the remnants of my food, I will consider myself superior and will be burdened by the weight of false pride. Therefore, always remaining your surrendered disciple, I shall not accept worship from anyone else. If you bestow upon me the right to chant the holy name, I will then give all honor to others without expecting any for myself. And I will sincerely weep in ecstasy while rolling on the ground at your lotus feet. O Vaishnav Thakur, please give me your mercy now. Then only will my false ego go far away.
Such a beautiful meditation. And here Bhaktivinoda Thakur is actually giving us a key. That this keshi is only a problem if we don't have the proper relationship with Guru and the Vaishnavas. Even if we feel ourselves properly situated in our relationship with Krishna, that tendency can still come up. Oh, I'm Krishna's devotee, I'm Krishna's nature, and thus, well, I happen to be the best. I'm the best one. But then when we develop our relationship with Guru in the mood of complete humility, realizing our actual position, that everything we have of any worth is His, He's given us that, then we're on safe ground. So what I wanted to do, because it's one thing to talk about things theoretically, but it's another thing to actually try and enter into the mindset of somebody who is fixed in this understanding, fixed in this realization. So what I thought we'd do is a little exercise where we'd look at the self-analysis of a devotee and then we'd look at how others see him. So what we're going to do is first hear how Sanatana Goswami, because he is, after all, Sambandha Gyan Param Guru. This is why I chose him. So we're going to have a look at him first, how he sees himself. And then we're going to see how very important people see him. So let's have a listen to that. Who am I? Sanatana Goswami.
Srila Sanatana Goswami's self-assessment. O Sri Krishna, I offer my repeated obeisances to the wonder of your mercy. You took me, a fallen wicked person, a cheater, always addicted to sinful ways, and lifted me from such depravity to an elevated state like that of your saintly devotees.
Note he doesn't say like your saintly devotees. He says that. He's saying here, elevate the state like that. He's not saying elevate the state of a saintly devotee. Like that. Isn't it sweet? You know, you catch this stuff. It's really amazing. So,
you took me from the terrible place where I lived and brought me to this most auspicious place, Mathura Mandal. I was stained by my past bad company, so you gave me the company of your most beloved Sri Chaitanya Deva and Nilachal. You gave me the delight of seeing your blessed face as you sat in your chariot. Then you brought me back to this Vrindavan, the place of so many of your pastimes. Here, you returned to me the company of your beloved devotee, Rupa Goswami, the only wealth of my life. I will always offer you my obeisances, over and over again. Now you please make your name appear from my mouth. And sometimes you allow me to remember your lotus feet in my heart. Even though my body is most lowly, please engage it in offering you obeisances. Please protect me from all dangers and give me the treasure of devotional service to you. Your mercy is a great wonder, non-different from you. It is pure eternity, knowledge, and bliss. It can empower me to always remember and glorify you in pure love. It can obtain from me your loving sidelong glance. It can enable me to see you absorbed in the company of the cows and the gopas and gopikas. Thus, for a helpless person like me, it is the ultimate resort of all hopes. Your wonderful mercy is ancient and eternal, but also ever new and fresh. To your mercy, again and again, I offer my obeisances forever.
What a beautiful person. These days we would call this low self-esteem. Let's see how Mahaprabhu, what he thinks of Sanatan Goswami.
Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's assessment of Srila Sanatana Goswami. Who is he? As soon as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw Sanatana Goswami in the courtyard, he immediately went up to him with great haste. After embracing him, the Lord was overwhelmed with ecstatic love. As soon as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu touched Sanatana Goswami, Sanatana was also overwhelmed with ecstatic love. In a faltering voice, he said, "O my Lord, do not touch me." Shoulder to shoulder, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Sanatana Goswami began to cry unlimitedly. Chandrasekhar was very much astonished to see this. Catching his hand, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took Sanatana Goswami inside and made him sit on an elevated place next to him. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu began cleansing Sanatana Goswami's body with his own transcendental hand, Sanatana Goswami said, "O my Lord, please do not touch me." The Lord replied, "I'm touching you just to purify myself, because by the force of your devotional service you can purify the whole universe. Saints of your caliber are themselves places of pilgrimage. Because of their purity, they are constant companions of the Lord, and therefore they can purify even the places of pilgrimage." Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued, "By seeing you, by touching you, and by glorifying your transcendental qualities, one can perfect the purpose of all sense activity. This is the verdict of the revealed scriptures. My dear Vaishnava, seeing a person like you is the perfection of one's eyesight. Touching your lotus feet is the perfection of the sense of touch. And glorifying your good qualities is the tongue's real activity. For in the material world it is very difficult to find a pure devotee of the Lord." Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued, "My dear Sanatan, please hear from me. Krishna is very merciful and he is the deliverer of all fallen souls. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, personally told Sanatana Goswami about Lord Krishna's real identity. He also taught him about the Lord's conjugal love, his personal opulence, and the mellows of devotional service. All these truths were explained to Sanatana Goswami by the Lord himself out of his causeless mercy."
So now we can see what we read from Sanatana Goswami about the role of mercy and humility. We can see the dynamics of that. In this little exchange. Let's try the next one. Krishnadas Kaviraj. What was his idea of himself. Let's hear that.
Srila Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami's self-assessment. All glory to Lord Nityananda Balaram, by whose mercy I have attained shelter in the transcendental abode of Vrindavan. All glory to the merciful Lord Nityananda, by whose mercy I have attained shelter at the lotus feet of Sri Rupa and Sri Sanata. By his mercy I have attained the shelter of the great personality, Sri Raghunath Das Goswami, and by his mercy I found the refuge of Sri Sarup Damodar. By the mercy of Sanatana Goswami, I have learned the final conclusions of devotional service, and by the grace of Sri Rupa Goswami, I have tasted the highest nectar of devotional service. All glory to the lotus feet of Lord Nityananda, by whose mercy I have attained Sri Radha Govinda. I am more sinful than Jagai and Madai, and even lower than the worms in the stool. Anyone who hears my name loses the results of his pious activities. Anyone who utters my name becomes sinful. Who in this world but Nityananda could show his mercy to such an abominable person as me? Because he is intoxicated by ecstatic love and is an incarnation of mercy, he does not distinguish between the good and the bad. He delivers all those who fall down before him. Therefore, he has delivered such a sinful and fallen person as me. Although I am sinful and I am the most fallen, he has conferred upon me the lotus feet of Sri Rupa Goswami.
Okay, let's hear what others think of him.
Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Goswami Thakur's assessment of Srila Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami and his Chaitanya Charitamrita. Once Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Goswami Thakur was glorifying the supremacy of Srila Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami's Chaitanya Charitamrita to his disciples, he instructed them as follows: if all the books in the world were destroyed, leaving only Srimad Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita, then people would still be able to achieve the ultimate goal of life. And if even the Srimad Bhagavatam was lost, leaving only Chaitanya Charitamrita, there would still be no loss to humanity. For even that which has not been revealed in the Bhagavatam is found in Chaitanya Charitamrita. The supreme absolute truth is Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the combined form of Radha and Krishna. The Chaitanya Charitamrita is his sound incarnation. The divine mystery of Radharani's divine status and glories are found therein. Can there be any doubt, therefore, of the supreme status of this piece of transcendental literature? Srimati Radharani's assessment of Srila Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami and his Chaitanya Charitamrita. While Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur was writing his commentary on the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila 21-125, he was unable to understand why Srila Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami had written that the Kama Gayatri Mantra consists of 24 and a half syllables rather than 25. He became so distraught by his inability to comprehend this that he finally took a vow to starve to death on the banks of Radhakund. As he dozed off in the middle of the night, the daughter of Vishabhanu appeared to him in a dream and said, "O Vishwanath, get up. Krishna Das has indeed written correctly. He is my dear Saki, who brings me much pleasure. I have blessed him so that he can understand the most intimate things about me. Do not doubt anything he has written. In the book named Varnagama Baswat, it is written that whenever the syllable ya is followed by the syllable vi, it is considered to be only half a syllable."
What are you learning from this scratch?
Krishna sees the devotees different than they see themselves.
Want to elaborate on that? Anybody else like to make a comment? What were you reading?
I find it interesting because in this world everybody has an identity crisis. And our life is all about just trying to figure out who I am. And we go to the shopping mall and we buy an identity off the rack. in the form of clothes. I like this music. I'm this kind of person. Next week, no, I'll get different clothes and different kind of music, and I'll be a different kind of person, because we're always insecure as to who we are. And as you were saying earlier, that people, if somebody thinks very badly of themselves, we don't appreciate that. We think that's a negative kind of thing. But here, Mahaprabhu and his associates, they're glorifying these devotees who begin to realize what their position is. The Haridas Thakur once said, Amita Adama, Adama. That's what I am. Amita Adama, Tumi Adama Tarna. And you're the deliverer of the fallen. Ubaye Sambande Patita Pavana. This is our relationship. So when we really understand what we are, then we become very, very humble and very, very feel ourselves very fallen. And then the Lord sees us devotees as the greatest personalities.
Beautiful insight. Anyone else like to say anything? Okay.
And he is only attracted by humility also,
no? It's a very powerful quality. Very powerful. You know, because the mercy doesn't flow up. If we think we're up, you know, we don't have a chance.
I noticed Prabhupada said in the Krishna book when facing him, Krishna was somewhat angry. And with the other demons, I don't remember anywhere that it was especially mentioned that he got angry.
Mm-hmm. He also says there with the Kesha demon that he dealt with him contemptuously. Not only was he angry, but with contempt. So that's an indication. You know, if we want to follow Kesha's footsteps, that's the treatment we're going to get from Krishna.
Could I read a couple of verses?
Yeah, please.
There was a very interesting section in Bhaktivinoda's Bhajan Rahasya. Mm. In the second section, he speaks about, he has a title, Qualification for Chanting the Holy Name. And I thought, wow, that's really good. I want to know, what is the qualification for chanting? And then when I read the verses that he gave, I was very surprised, and it's very much in line with this discussion. But he first quotes this verse from the 11th canto, Svese vikare yanishta saguna parikirtitaha vipariyastu doshasyadu bayoyesa nishtaya, that to be steady in your own position, be honest, that's actual piety. Whereas if you deviate from your position, that's impiety. And then he describes further, what are the qualifications for chanting the holy names? Very important thing. This is a verse, two verses spoken by Krishna to Uddhava. Jatashadu makatasu nivina sarva karmasu vedidukatmakam karaman puritike panishvara. That sometimes a devotee, Jatashadu, he has faith, he's awoke in faith in Krishna Katha. But nivina sarva karmasu, he's also disgusted with material activities. And he knows, Veda Dukatmakam Kaman, that if I engage in these illicit activities, it's going to make me miserable. But Paritige Panishvara, he can't give up his attachment. So then the next verse, Krishna, this is in the 11th canto, Krishna says, Tato Bhajita Mam Pritaha, Shredalur Jivanishchaya, Jushamanish Chitam Kaman, Dukko Darkam Chagarya. That such a devotee, he should worship me with affection, Prita, with faith, shraddha, with determination and conviction, even while engaging in his sense gratification.
What verse is it?
This is 11th canto, chapter 20, text 27 to 28. Even while he's engaging in sense gratification, he says, knowing that this sense gratification will lead to misery, and all the while hating his attachment to material pleasures. In this way, sincerely lamenting his attachments to material pleasures, he should go on worshipping me with affection and conviction, and gradually his material attachments will disappear. So this is a qualification. Doesn't mean I have to be a pure devotee first, or I have no material desires, or this or that. But really what it says then is that I should be honest. That's the qualification. I really feel that I'm very fallen. Hello. That's what you're saying.
Yeah. The other thing that I've caught in it is this sense of relationship with Krishna. You know, because so often we see things independent of him. But here it's really bringing it out, you know, this importance of whatever our state, however poor we have a relationship with Krishna. So let's build on that, not be so much about us as an independent entity, but what's happening with the relationship. Mm-hmm. How can I actually develop this relationship from where I am? And what we're seeing here is that this mood of utter dependence, this mood of humility, is very strong. You know, it's how we attract this amazing person. It's how we attract him at our stage.
It's very much like the Chaturanga Shloka, the most important verse of Bhagavad Gita, Sarvadhanam Pratyaga, where Krishna says, give up all religion and surrender to me, and I'll relieve you of sin. I always find it interesting. Krishna says sarva dharma pratyaya. He doesn't say sarva papa pratyaya. Give up all sin. He says you give up all religion and surrender to me, because you're all that I have. I don't have any other hope for anything. And
and he says don't fear. You know, we're so fearful of relationship. We're so used to controllership. I'm on my own territory, I'm safe. So Krishna's saying, you do this, you just trust me. Trust me. Don't fear.
So I never applied that. Don't fear to the relationship.
Yeah. Yes.
I was always applying it to...
That's beautiful.
Don't fear of the reactions or the things or whatever. But I haven't thought about this. And Prabhupada talks about this, that once the impersonalist became so fried with relationships, and that's why they become impersonalists.
Yeah, interesting.
2 days ago we were at a wedding, and we saw this young girl, 22 or something, and her mother and father and sister there, and I saw the look on her face. It was very much like this. She was crying, and I could see she looked so vulnerable, because now I'm putting myself in the care of this boy. I hope I can trust him. This is going to be my relationship. I'm saying goodbye to my father and my mother. And this is what you're saying.
Yeah.
This is a relationship. A relationship means trust and don't fear.
I wanted to say something else about this
humility. Speak up a little bit.
Okay, sorry. About this humility. That for me, humility is just the honest reality. This is what the... Bhagavatam says here that this is just where I am at. I'm sorry, this is where I am at. But then Dhanudharma speaks about this. You mentioned a few times how the mercy flows. Mm-hmm. It doesn't go up the road. And Dhanudharma speaks quite a bit about this, that the bigger the distance, the smallest I feel myself, the more humble I am, and the more higher I see Krishna, then the better chance that the mercy will come, because it has a better flow. I just like it.
Yeah, that's sweet.
I had one question from this one. Sanatana Goswami said, in the company of people whose only taste is for devotional service in pure love, that love appears of its own accord. Yet one must try hard to keep it concealed.
What
does it mean that we have to means when we get prema, we have to keep it concealed?
Yeah, actually Sanatana Goswami makes an interesting comment in his book up there. He says that while we're in the process of, you know, we're developing this prem and it's starting to manifest, then we should try and keep it concealed, because it's a very precious thing. And
concealed means you have to hide it.
Yeah, we don't go around talking about it to everybody.
But I got this realization, I got this mercy.
Yeah, like that. But the interesting thing that he says is once prem is fully blossomed, there's no way you can hide it. It has a life of its own. So you can't hide it at that stage. But the onus that he's putting on us as sadhakas, those of us who are still within the realm of bhakti, whether it be Raghunuga or whether it be Satyanavadi, our responsibility is to realize that it's not a matter, and I've spoken about this before, it's not only a matter of our faith in Krishna, but Krishna's trust in us. So if by some inconceivable good fortune he starts to trust us, Our guru starts to trust us. The acharyas start to trust us. They start revealing things to us. If we reveal that to an inappropriate audience, it's called disrespecting confidential subject matters. And that obviously is going to break Krishna's trust, Guru's trust, the Acharya's trust. And it may take us many lifetimes to regain that trust. It's not a cheap thing. So it gets back to what we were talking about in the last class, you know, when we were talking about Vishwanath Chakravarti's Thakur's commentary, the difference between external and internal devotee. So if you're properly situated, you realize that your whole business in life is to prepare your heart for Krishna. You know, then are you going to be interested in, you know, like telling the world about this great treasure you've got and nobody else has got?
But that doesn't mean we can't share with anybody.
No, it doesn't mean like that.
With devotee friends.
Bhaktivinoda speaks about that in Bhakti Lok.
Okay,
nicely
sure,
too.
Yeah.
He says that we should not associate with non-devotees. But he said, then what's a grihastha supposed to do? A grihastha has to go to work, he has to have a job. And not only that, he has to be nice to people. How was your vacation? How was your wife? How are your kids? He says they have to be affectionate, but that affection should only be external. It shouldn't be something very deep and with the heart. There's a verse in this regard too in Hari Bhakti Vilas where Sanatana Goswami says that Gopiyad Nija Malakam, you should hide your mala, Gopiyad Nija Devata, you should hide your Ishtadev, you should hide your mantra, Gopiyad Nija you should hide your guru. And sometimes devotees become confused. There's no commentary on it even. I should hide my guru, I should deny him, I should deny my... We're supposed to give the mantra to everybody. What do you mean, hide it? It doesn't mean that we don't give it. It doesn't mean that we deny our guru. But what he's talking about, my understanding, is that we should have some love for our guru. We don't know who Krishna is. That's a very high thing, love for Krishna. But I should have some love for my Gurudev. And just as we should ultimately hide our love for Krishna, in the beginning we learn that by hiding my love for my Gurudev and hiding the confidential instructions he's given me about my personal bhajan and hiding whatever realization I have about the holy name, my personal feelings about it.
Prabhuji, I have a question in that sometimes, you know, I understand what you mean by hiding, but sometimes when we hear from, you know, advanced devotees about their realizations, about their, you know, then it enlivens us. So if they start hiding, then, you know, it's very difficult for a neophyte devotee to really, you know, get the inspiration.
We may speak some philosophy, some understanding, but there's another thing that would reveal my feelings or things that have happened to me. Maybe some Vaishnava may see Krishna and Krishna may speak to him or something which is a very, very personal, heartfelt thing. There's a difference between that. And even with speaking philosophy, we should always pray that Krishna, please speak through me and speak in an appropriate way for these people. And I've seen with my Guru Maharaj and with Srila Prabhupada, with any empowered Vaishnava, they'll say one thing, but they may be saying a thousand things at the same time. It looks like one thing because they're speaking to a certain audience who doesn't have so much adhikar. And in this regard, in Kaviraj Goswami's Chaitanya Charitamrita, he says, I'm afraid to speak what I'm about to speak because people, they're not qualified. He said, but then I take comfort in the fact that they won't understand it anyway. So we should see it like that. We should try to say certain things. If there's an audience, sometimes one person may be really qualified to hear. Mm. We can say something a little bit backhanded, and that person, I was sitting in the class with Fakir Mohan Prabhu, and he was speaking, and I saw there were a lot of young people there, and he was saying some things that was really just blowing my mind, and I saw nobody picked up on that. And there was one other Mataji who was there. Two of us picked up on that. Nobody else could see that. And he was emphasizing some Sanskrit things, and nobody could see what he was saying. So we keep it secret in that way. But at the same time, we give it.
I think the other side of the coin is that what we're talking about here is general public, but when we actually develop relationships with devotees and there is a trust in that relationship, then things will be a bit freer. And in relation to what you were saying, it's in Prema Bhakti Chandrika that we, this kind of things, confidential things we may be blessed with, that's for discussion with our spiritual authorities. And if Narottam Das, he says that if we don't maintain that standard, then the result will be that we may become proud, others will become envious, or they become critical. So all of these three things are a disturbance to our bhajan. So what we're really looking at is what is favorable for honest bhajan. And then if we, you know, if we look at it in that light, then things become a lot clearer. It's like when you make a sabji. If you know, you know, the basic formula for spicing, then every time you make a sabji, it's not a big endeavor. But if every time you have to think, what do I do? I don't know how to use this sabji, then it's a nightmare. So it's getting back to what Rupika says about, you know, principle and detail. So in this circumstance, we understand the essence of it. That what we're talking about is, you know, what's favorable for my bhajan, my honest bhajan. You know, what's favorable for developing a mood of utter dependence on my Guru Maharaj and on Krishna. What's favorable for developing a true sense of humility. So if we look at it in that light, rather than, you know, this detail and that detail, how I covered that, you know, then if we get the principle in place, then it's a lot easier to deal. You don't have an answer for one circumstance, you have an answer for most circumstances.
And like when our acharyas, they also sometimes write books about pastimes which have been revealed to them. That is for other devotees to relish, not for general public.
Yeah. And you know, basically, they come in sadhika vesh for us. We can't relate to them in their original or their nature form. So they're coming in that form so we can approach them. And with, it's not even so much to relish those pastimes, but if we, even if we look at it in terms of eligibility through nam, chanting nam, then, you know, things will start to be revealed within the heart. You have to have a reference point. Am I on track or not? Right? So if Vrindavan is starting to manifest in your heart, what do you do about that? Right? So it works both ways. That it may be manifest, if you have that good fortune, that adhika, it may be manifesting in the heart, then, oh yeah. And if you don't have it, but you're aspiring for it, oh yeah. Both ways. It's an inspiration both ways. Like that. But it's not that it is, you know, like, you know, this word relishing we have to be careful with, because too often at our level, or my level anyway, it can be enjoying rather than relishing. We have to be a little bit careful. Okay. Go on.
Sometimes I think in the beginning we're very much affected by the movement, and we, this thing about hiding and having something personal, something public. We sometimes think that preaching means that I wear my bhajan on my sleeve and then I just talk with everybody about my bhajan and share with everyone. But we often think that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who's Krishna, come in the mood of Radha, come to teach us. He's come to do a Charya Leela to teach us how to do bhajan. And he's opened up the Jagannath Puri University of Braj Prem. And so in Jagannath Puri, there's different classrooms. In each one of those classrooms, he's showing us some different aspects about the development of praying. And two of the most important ones are the Jagannath Mandir and the Gambira. And to me, these represent a kind of a cake, also, of Gaura Leela. Sometimes people, the cake has two aspects. It has the sponge part and it has the icing. And some people, they'll say, well, I only like the sponge part, I don't like the icing. But some people only like the icing and not the sponge. And sometimes some devotees in our society, followers of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, were a little afraid of the icing, which is like Raghunuga Bhakti, which is like the Gambhira, and we only wanted to emphasize the sponge, but the sponge is a little dry by itself. And the other people, they only want to take the icing. But if you only take the icing, you get indigestion. You need to have the sponge also. And so Gaura Lila, he's teaching us that we have a public face in the Jagannath Mandir where he was going, Lochan Das Thakur says, 3 times a day. That was his public face, supporting organized religion and all the unlimited rules and regulations in the Jagannath Temple. But at the same time, he had a private site inside the Gambhira with this very small group of intimate devotees. And to me, part of the lesson of that is that if we want to really advance in Mahaprabhu's line, we also have, the majority of us is for preaching and Prabhupada's mission, but there also has to be a Gambhira side here in Mother Srimati's room or something with some like-minded devotees in the Gambhira.
That's the nice analogy. Okay, so the next question that comes is how can we personally develop such an amazing devotional mindset? That's what we've been talking about. Krishnadas Kaviraj, Sanatana Goswami. So I wanted to have a look at 2 bhajans from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. First we'll have a read of You Are Master, I Am Servant. Siddharani?
O Lord Krishna, You are the Father of the Universe. You are the Mother of the Universe. O Lord Krishna, You are the Beloved Son. You are the Spiritual Master, the Well-Wisher and the Friend. You are the shelter and the Kalpavriksha tree. In these ways, I have a relationship with You. I am Your servant, Your follower, a poor person who begs You for shelter, a soul surrendered at Your graceful feet. I am Your property, Your creation, Your dependent, protected by You. I am Yours. Bhaktivinoda says, I do not proudly think I and mine in my relationship with Lord Krishna. Still, as I serve Him, I do think in terms of I and mine. Outside of serving Him, these would be only material thoughts.
Mm-hmm. Very sweet bhajan, because we're not doing away with the I and mine. We're just redirecting it.
It's also significant here, he says to me, he doesn't say apni.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, always. Always.
He's very informal, sweet.
Yeah. I wanted also to have a look at Vaishnava Thakur. We just want to do this in quite a meditative way. So I thought if you could sing it, and at the end, if you could read the translation, that would be very powerful.
Why don't you sing it? And I'll do the translation.
O he Vaishnava Thakura Doyara Sagara Edase Karuna Kori Diapalachaya Shodayamaya Tomara Charana Dhovi.
O Venerable Vaishnav, O Ocean of Mercy, be merciful unto Your servant. Give me the shade of Your lotus feet and purify me. I hold on to Your lotus feet.
Chaya bega domi, chaya dosha shodi, chaya guna dehodasi. Chaya satsanga deho yamare, boshechi sangera ashe.
Teach me to control my 6 passions, rectify my 6 faults, bestow upon me the 6 qualities, and offer unto me the 6 kinds of holy association.
Ekaki amara nahi paya bada harinama sankirtane. Tumi kripa kori shadhaya bindariya deho Krishna namadhani.
I do not find the strength to carry on alone the sankirtan of the holy name of Hari. Please bless me by giving me just 1 drop of faith which to obtain the great treasure of all in the name of Krishna.
Krishna se tomara, Krishna dite paro, tomara shokati ache. Amito kangara, Krishna Krishna voli, dhaita vapache pache.
Krishna is yours, You have the power to give into me. I'm simply running behind you, shouting, Krishna, Krishna.
It's such a beautiful bhajan. And we're seeing a very, very deep and very, very practical humility and a very strong dependence on Krishna's pure devotee. Do we have it? Primary question is, do we have it? This is something, a real thing to think about. You know, how real is our relationship with Guru? How real is our relationship with the Vaishnavas? I wanted to have a look at this last line. It's always been a fascination for me. Where it says, Krishna is yours, you have the power to give him to me. I'm simply running behind you, shouting, Krishna, Krishna. Now, when I read this in relation to the Keshi Anatta that we're dealing with, it took on a very interesting twist, and I wanted to share that with you. So we're running after a Vaishnava for his mercy. Can we run after someone who's standing still? No. He also has to be running. So our Gurudev is running after Prabhupada. Prabhupada is running after Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakura. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakura is running after Gokashadas Babaji. Gokashadas Babaji is running after Bhaktivinoda Thakura. Bhaktivinoda Thakura is running after Jagannathas Babaji. Jagannathas Babaji, all the way back to Mahaprabhu. Running and crying. Running and crying. Is Mahaprabhu standing still? He's running and crying.
Oh, he's running in the ocean.
He's running and crying. He's running after Krishna. Is Krishna standing still? Or is he running and crying? He had to take on the form of Mahaprabhu to run and cry. So our sampradaya is a running and crying sampradaya. And the interesting difference between our acharyas and Keshi is that our acharyas feel no sense of achievement or perfection. Their mood is one of hankering. Theirs is a mood of separation. I'm a great devotee. I'm an acharya. There's a sense of achievement. There's a sense of perfection. It's not the mood of our acharyas. It's not the mood of our acharyas. And it's very, very clear in the last verse of Sadgosanyastika. I offer my respectful obeisances under the six Goswamis, namely Sri Rupa Goswami, Sri Sanatana Goswami, Sri Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, Sri Raghunath Das Goswami, Sri Jiva Goswami, and Sri Gopal Bhatta Goswami, who are chanting very loudly everywhere in Vrindavan, shouting, Queen of Vrindavan, Radharani, O Lalita, O son of Nanda Maharaj, where are you all now? Are you just on the hill of Govardhan? Or are you under the trees on the bank of the Yamuna? Where are you? Not I see where you are. Where are you? These were their moods in executing Krishna consciousness. So I wanted to really look at this a little bit more deeply by looking at an extremely deep and extremely beautiful bhajan by Bhaktivinoda Thakura. And it's particularly heart-rendering because it's not his own bhajan. It's a meditation on a bhajan by Rupa Goswami. It's a meditation on Rupa Goswami's Kapanya Panjika. So I've only used certain sections of it. We've called it Begging for Service. I want you to really listen to this in a very, very prayerful mood because it's so powerful. Weeping and weeping and turning away from all shyness, I, a very poor-hearted person who lives in Braja's forests, now speaks the prayers that are in my heart. O Krishna of Vrindavan, O Queen of Braja's forests, O ruler of my life, with words choked with emotion, I, a great fool, place this honest request before you both. If you think I am not worthy to receive your mercy in this forest of Braj, please be merciful anyway to this fallen's person. O merciful king and queen, I take shelter of your feet. Although I am unworthy, and although I am an offender, please be merciful to me. You too are very merciful. You forgive a host of offenses. Although I am lowly, I proudly think myself exalted. Although I am a fool, I proudly think myself wise. Although I am wicked, I proudly think myself a saint. These are my faults. Many days have passed, and still I do not worship you. Still, if in this lifetime, this poor person somehow chants the dim light, Namabhas, of the holy name, then please, O divine couple, be merciful to him. Free him of his faults, and allow him to chant your holy names. Even a small fragment of devotional service destroys all offenses. O merciful divine couple, please forgive me and purify me of my faults. That is the desire in my heart. That is the prayer I place before your feet. You are kind and affectionate to persons who have no master or shelter. I am very low and fallen. I have no master. I have no shelter. I beg to serve you directly. Please give me the gift of your mercy. Please save the life of this person without master or shelter. Turning away from all else, I beg to serve you. Such a powerful bhajan. I beg to serve you. This is my only request. I beg to serve you.
In Nectar Devotion, Prabhupada, I wish I had the most of me, he translates a verse from the Vishwami. He speaks about the causes of humility. And he says that committing and the realization someone's committed, I've committed a great offense, and being very, very fallen, combined together and in the position of Krishna, that produces humility. So in that sense, I find it interesting. It's not that in that sense, even human offenses are actually our friends. if we embrace them, and if we consider ourselves to be very fallen and lowly, and that's my real position, then that'll produce humility. Mm-hmm. Not religion. Not perfect following religion.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I like that. Because all of this understanding that I'm something special, it's so unreal. But it's so much a part of the way we think of ourselves. You know? When you think, you know, Hari Bhakti Vilas tells us, if we're born from a papyoni, the very first sin we commit in this world is to be born. Birth is a sinful act. So when you think of it, you know, like...
Where's that?
Yeah. Wow. That just, you know, like we're taking birth from a papyoni, and so our very birth is an act of sin. So, I mean, what ground have we factually got to stand on to think we're something special? And yet it's so ingrained in us. And it's coming from this envy of Krishna, this aversion to Krishna. And, you know, we can get away with it because we're interacting with the material energy. You know, we're superior to it. Like you were saying earlier with the clothes. I take on a new image, I go and buy some new clothes, you know, get some new paraphernalia, that's the new me. But in reality, you know, it doesn't make any sense. It just doesn't make any sense.
There's this local story about Madhu Mangal and Keshi. You know that local story? Which really, I think, illustrates the essence of this, to me, the essence of this pastime. One day Madhu Mangal, he saw how Krishna was, everywhere he was going, everybody was giving madhus and sweets to Krishna. And Madhu was feeling unhappy. He said, this is not right, I'm a Brahmin. Just a Vaishya. They should be giving the sweets to me. And Madhu Mangal was carefully watching everything. And after a little while, he came to the conclusion that the reason they're doing this is because you have that vamsi, that flute, and the peacock feather, and that beautiful dhoti. So he said, hey, Bandhu, you should lend them to me today. And Krishna said, okay. So Madhu Mangal got the flute and the peacock feather and that yellow dhoti. And Madhu Mangal started having a really good day then. because he would go places and he would kind of make a little noise, and put the peacock feather around the door, and people would, oh, Krishna's here, and they would get sweets. Mother Mongol was very, very happy. But meanwhile, in Mathura, Kamsa was in so much anxiety, how am I going to kill this Krishna? So then Keshi came forward. And Keshi said, I'll do it. Okay. You go and you kill this Krishna. Well, how do I recognize him? Flute, pick up, fill in the belly. Okay, I got it, boss. So Keshi came to Vrindavan and his son, Mother Mongol, was having a very good day. Pretending like he was Krishna. And in case she came running at Madhu Mongol became terrified and started running. In case she didn't even touch him, he just kicked his feet in the air, and from the wind that touched Keshi's feet, it blew Madhu Mongol so many feet, and he fell down on the ground and began crying. He ran back to Krishna, took off the cut, take these things back, I don't want these anymore. And I think that sometimes we see it's not so hard. My Gurudev, he had a danda, and he had this orange cloth, and they really gave him off his son. And I just learned a couple verses, and that's all you have to do. And so we become like Madhu Mangal, and we dress up, and then Maya comes and gives us a big kick, and then we start crying, I don't want this costume anymore, and we throw the danda away and this thing. And so we want to act, we want to dress up like someone that we're not. And that's the nature of the Keshi demon. Mm-hmm. I think it's interesting too. Keshi also, if I understand, you can correct me, it means hair.
Kesh. Kesh means
yes, hair.
So Kesh is something which, hair means pride. You wear your hair, and in Renunciation, they'll shave their head because the hair is a great source of pride, and it means someone who's making a show externally. So that person who does that, that's Keshi.
Okay. So let's begin by having a look at Krishna book. Anybody have anything they'd like to say from Krishna book reading? Anything that struck you of importance?
Something that you mentioned about contempt, Krishna treating him with contempt.
Mm.
I thought it was interesting that Krishna used his left arm to kill him.
Mm.
Because left arm is not like really pure, so it is like when you're showing contempt, it would be the left hand. So I thought that was really interesting.
It's the same way you look to go.
Why do you believe?
Yeah.
Oh, because it's just nothing. It's so easy for him.
Some Vaishnavas say that he lifted Govardhan with his left hand and his left finger and his left. and who's on his left? Get the shakti with their
That's
true.
Oh, where is this? That's beautiful. Where's that from?
I heard it from some local Vaishnavas.
Oh, okay. Well, that's very beautiful. Anybody else have anything they wanted to say?
I also found it interesting that he put his hand so far inside, he has such a soft hand, and then he has so big teeth, but he chose to kill him by, like, and I think it was said that it looked like a snake going inside a hole.
Yeah.
Means really like his arm went far inside his mouth.
Touched his intestines.
And then I found it interesting that he chose to, he could have killed him, you know, just slap him on the crown or give him a slap, but he really put his hand inside.
We have to get to the inner person, not to the show.
Maybe it's also indicative of that he's shutting him up. That's
he came running with his mouth wide open. And
Actually, that's the way I saw it. And it really fascinated. I suppose got fascinated by the way Prabhupada says things, because he's watching. Krishna is first watching how Keshi is causing such a disturbance to the Vrijavasis. He's just watching that. And then he sees that he's coming towards him, and he obviously wants to fight. And then Prabhupada says, he contemptuously threw him. Contemptuously. and he pushed his left arm into his mouth. Now, this is the person that says, I'm a great acharya, I'm a great devotee. Okay, sure, you know. And you're saying, I'm going to shut him up. But it's very interesting. I thought to read what Vishwanath says here, because it's really in relation to this contempt. He really makes it very clear. He says that Keshi stood up after regaining consciousness, opened his mouth wide, and charged again. Krishna just laughed, showed his left thumb, and said, do you want to eat something here? Here, eat this. Krishna then thrust his left arm into Keshi's open mouth to kill him, just as a snake easily enters a hole to kill a mouse. As Keshi's teeth touched Krishna's arm to chew on it, still trying to get some, you know, my position is as good as yours, like, chew a bit, I'll get something, you know, it's me, it's not you. Chew on it, and chew a bit more. As Keshi's teeth touched Krishna's arm to chew on it, they become uprooted and fell out, just as if contacting a red-hot iron. Although Krishna's arm is softer and more cooling than the blue lotus, to Keshi it felt as hard and hot as a thunderbolt. Just as a torturous person perceives sugar candy as bitter, Krishna's arm expanded within Keshi's mouth until he died. Until he died, this arm of Krishna kept expanding, just as Krishna expanded his body within the mouth of Abhisura.
It's interesting that Keshi wants to digest Krishna.
Yeah.
But he can't digest him in his pride.
Yeah.
You know, before his teeth fall out, which is also another source of grief, probably like Balaram taking out.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And so he can't digest Krishna, and his teeth are broken.
And fall out. You know, just teeth on mats don't usually fall out like that. The whole thing, you know, it's just really, I mean, this contempt that he felt, just the way it's spelled out like that, but it's really not something that Krishna likes.
And on the other hand, we often, many places in Vaishnava literature, it says Dante Trinidori Gora, that Dante Trinidori, Daki Hetomar, I'm calling out your name, was straw in my teeth. With this utter humility, and that's the proper use of my teeth, not that I can try to digest Krishna through my knowledge or through my position or something.
Yeah. Fakimambhu explained that analogy to me. It's an incredible analogy, actually. He explained that in the Manasamhita, the most heinous thing you can do is to have a cow die under your protection. Okay. And if that happens, the way you have to atone for that is to live in the Goshala for a year and to beg only, you can't speak because you're such an offender, you've done such a heinous thing. Your vibration of your words would actually offend people, would even offend the environment. So you can't speak. So you put grass from the goshala in your mouth, and then you go begging. You do madhukari like that. Then everybody knows that a cow has died in your care.
And you can only eat that what you beg.
Yeah.
And you can't speak the whole year to nobody.
Yeah, because offense.
And what it indicates also, just like every parent understands when they chastise a child, why did you do this? Oh, it wasn't my fault. This one, when you have straw in your teeth, it indicates I accept the punishment.
Right.
I'm not going to give any excuses.
I'm showing that I'm accepting it. Externally, unprepared. Not only internally, I'll tell a few friends, but I'm telling the world. I'm such an offender. You know. Let me do this stuff. I wanted to read something from Gauga Samhita. He always has something interesting to say. I did this last time also. We're looking at Keshi. Okay. He doesn't have much to say, but it's interesting. Shinarad said, one day the powerful and ferocious demon Keshi assumed the form of a wild horse. Neighing like thunder, he entered beautiful Vrindavan. His footsteps made the great trees fall. The swishing of his tail broke apart the clouds in the sky. When they saw him fiercely charging at them, the terrified gopis and gopis ran to Sri Krishna for shelter. Saying, "Don't be afraid," the Lord removed their fears. Then, tightening the yellow sash at his waist, the Supreme Lord, the deliverer from all troubles, went to kill the demon. O King, shaking the ground and making the sky echo with his name, the great demon kicked Lord Krishna with his hind legs. Grabbing the demon's legs and whirling him around and around with one arm, Krishna threw the demon 8 miles into the sky, just as a great wind uproots and throws a lotus flower. Filled with anger, the demon returned to the courtyards of Braj and with his tail violently struck Lord Krishna. Grabbing his tail and whirling the demon around and around with the strength of his arms, the Lord threw him 18 miles into the sky. When he fell from the sky, the powerful demon was somewhat disturbed at heart. He was really stone-hearted, this guy. Standing up and again, he neighed like thunder, shaking his mane, swishing his tail in the air, and breaking the ground with his hooves. The demon, the horse demon, jumped before Lord Krishna. Lord Krishna punched him, and the demon was unconscious for an hour. Then, grabbing Krishna's neck, the demon pulled him 800,000 miles into the sky. For 6 hours, they fought fiercely. With his hooves, teeth, mane, and the sharp razor of his tail, the horse demon attacked Krishna. Suddenly grabbing him and whirling him around and around with both arms, Lord Krishna threw the demon to the earth, just as a child throws a kamandalu. Lord Krishna then thrust his arm into the demon's mouth. Pushed into the demon's belly, the arm expanded like an incurable disease. Passing stolen urine, his life breath stopped and his stomach broken by the Lord's arm, the horse demon suddenly died. From the demon's body, there suddenly emerged a being wearing a crown and earrings. With folded hands, he bowed down before glorious Lord Krishna. That being said, "O Lord Krishna, my name is Kumuda, and I am a servant of King Indra. I am powerful, handsome, heroic, and glorious. I carry Indra's parasol. When Vritrasura was killed, to become free of the sin of killing a brahmana, Indra performed an Ashvamedha yagya. Yearning to ride that horse, I stole it from a splendid sacrificial arena. It was a beautiful horse, one black ear, and it ran as fast as the mind. I rode it to Talaloka. The Maruts there bound me with ropes and brought me back. Indra cursed me, saying, 'Wretch, become a demon. For 2 manvantaras you'll have a horse's form on earth.' O Lord, today your touch has freed me from that curse. O Lord, please make me your servant. My heart is fixed on your lotus feet. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Super Soul who is the witness of all." Srinarad said, "O King of Mathila, after circumambulating Lord Krishna, Kumuda entered a celestial airplane and at once flew to Vaikuntha Loka, filling the directions with light as he went." Interesting person. This is why I want to deal with Kamsa. We have to kill Kamsa because who do we know? Do we really know who we're looking at? You want to say something?
I'm just trying to recall when Dhanuka started to offer prayers, then he kind of was it Dhanuka? Because here, Keshi offers these prayers and then he goes to Vaikuntha.
He's had a change of heart.
He was already dead, no?
He was Indra's servant, but he had a change of heart.
The horse already died. Then he offered, the person came out and offered the prayers.
Well, that's right.
Because
Krishna didn't want to kill.
Dhanuka was different. He already prayed before.
Yeah, before he was... killed, and then I was just trying to put this together.
This story about Kumud is also very significant, because we may say that, that Bhaktivinoda is saying that Dhanuka represents someone who's trying to assert the position of guru and act like someone. And how do we do that? A very common thing, which we see all the time in our society, sadly, too, is someone gets initiated, and they're very sincere before they get initiated. And after they get initiated, then they tell the sadhu, their guru, Maharaj, I see you have this problem. Now you have hundreds of people coming to you, and I'll be your representative.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll organize things for you, because you're not a manager kind of person. Let me organize things for you. And then that disciple starts becoming the representative. Kumuda was a representative of Indra. And Indra represents religion. Indra Rivyakulam Lokam Vidyanti Yuge Yuge. Krishna comes again and again to help Indra. And Kumuda becomes proud then, yes. That position starts changing, which I've heard so many times in our society, even with Srila Prabhupada. We've read stories of devotees who were claiming to represent Prabhupada, claiming to represent the Guru. Even the Guru told them to represent me. You want to do that? Yes, you do that. And they start taking that position, like Keshi. Another thing that's interesting about Keshi, I find, is in the completely different subject. It's in the Harivamsa Purana. And it speaks about this pastime. It says a really horrible thing. The Keshi came, and then he was eating some of the residents. He was eating people and eating different animals and things in Braj. And as you're reading this, I was thinking about that Harivamsa Purana statement. I thought, how do we understand that? That's so ghastly, how he could come and kill some of the residents of Braj. And I was thinking how in written pastime of Putin and Jiva Goswami, in Lagu Vaishnava Toshini, he says that when Putana came to Braj, the Bhagavatam says she was killing the babies of Braj. And Jiva Goswami says, my God, how do we understand that? She's killing the Brajbasi babies? He said, no. Actually, she wasn't. She was just killing the sons and daughters of the followers of Kamsa. Mm. And in that way, actually, she thought she was doing something for herself, but she was really helping Krishna. So I think with confidence we could say a similar thing about Keshi. The Keshi comes and he's the so-called follower of Indra, Kumuda, the representative of Guru, and he's coming and he kills people in Braj, but he doesn't really kill the Brajbasis. But who then does he kill? Those people who also want to be the representative of Guru. He kills the so-called Brajbasis who look like devotees.
I wanted to read something from Gopal Champu also. He's always got something interesting to say. On the 11th day of the waning moon in the principal Magh month, Narad, Kamsa's enemy, endowed with great knowledge, came to Kamsa and acted in a friendly manner. He told him the secret activities of Vasudeva in Nanda's house, and that Krishna and Balaram were the sons of Vasudeva.
This was Narad?
Narad. He's such an amazing person. Hearing this, Kamsa, enemy of the devotees, became angry and again imprisoned Vasudeva and Devaki with iron chains so they could not kill him. After imprisoning them, foolish Kamsa called Keshi and again engaged him. As soon as he got his orders, Keshi departed for Braj and arrived in the morning. After Arista had been killed, Keshi lived far from Nandeshwar Hill. And he was living there.
Uh-huh.
But he lived quite away because he saw Arista got killed. So he stayed away from it. And thus he came from a distance to Braj. He tore up the soil of Braj with his sharp hooves. Coming to Braj and tossing his mane high in the air, he wandered about. The devotees flying in their airplanes became terrified at his loud neighing, and stopping all their activities, hid behind the clouds. But Keshi covered the airplanes with his huge body, just as the clouds had previously covered them. Because of Keshi, the clouds released deafening thunder, and the devotees withered up. Running with speed, the horse demon smashed all the trees. Intensely arrogant, he made everyone tremble and spread his loud neighing everywhere like a lion's roar. He's not a lion, but he's trying to roar like a lion. When the roaring spread, the cows leaped from the stables, which had unbreakable wooden bolts and huge rough doors, which were difficult to pass. Not considering the difficulty in leaving the place, the horse demon entered the edge of Braj and galloped around, searching for Krishna, the killer of his friend Arista. Because the cows ran away, Nanda and the cowherd men, full of lamentation, immediately came out of their houses and went towards Kesha with caution. Then Krishna, who destroys the happiness of the demons, passed all others at full speed and went in front. Passing Balaram, he appeared astonishing as he faced the demon. The people of Braj, feeling intense pain, tried to prevent Krishna from going in front of the demon. They spoke, "The horse's hairs are as hard as thunderbolts. He can defeat Indra. At his name, the devatas and swag are defeated and leave their place. You are a tender young tall tree growing in the shady place. Don't go immediately from the town and face the demon." As the inauspiciousness got closer, an argument arose between Yashoda and Krishna. "Oh, son, where are you going?" "Oh, mother, I see a horse. It appears to have very bad intentions." "But what are we going to do, mother? The horse does not have a rider." "Go to your house. Go to the house." "Mother, I'm without knowledge of what's beneficial." Losing her self-control and showing boldness, Yashoda spoke to Nanda. "O king of Braj, you're the master of this house. From childhood, I have not addressed you with any impolite words, but today I'm revealing my desire. Please hear. Why do you not catch and hold this boy? Hold him and all his friends. Why doesn't somebody else go and catch that horse? From time without beginning, the brother of Balaram has destroyed the demons." Thus, on hearing her words, giving faith to her with a smile, Krishna, the object of faith for the universe and giver of joy to all, regarding the demon with disdain, beckoned him to come close. Called by Krishna, the demon began scolding him. Internally, the demon was already defeated by Krishna's power, but did not tremble before him. He thought he was so brave. Coming close to show his prowess, he then ran to a space on the bank of the Yamuna. He galloped to the space near the river because he thought he could show his power in running, ascertaining Krishna as the performer of great activity. The enemy of the devatas, with great pride, roared like hundreds of thousands of lions. The demon wanted to approach them, toss them about, and then swallow everyone at once. Not able to tolerate this, Krishna roared like a lion. Glaring at the demon intensely, he faced him and challenged him. All the distressed people of Braj followed Krishna. The demons, seeing him coming, became blind, unable to see or hear. In that condition, he came before Krishna and spoke in anger. The demon surpassed the sky and spread everywhere. He opened his mouth as if to swallow the sky. He attacked the sky with his hooves, but Krishna countered all his moves. Regaining consciousness, Krishna threw the strong demon high in the air as if he were a bunch of hair. The demon landed far, far away. And when he regained consciousness, he stood up. With gaping mouth, he charged Krishna. Krishna shoved his left arm into his mouth, like a snake entering a frog's mouth. In a spirit of virarasa, Krishna's arm, like a divine snake, grew large and large and larger in the demon's throat. Because of the arm's power, Keshi's teeth fell out, as if he were afflicted with poison. His teeth fell out, his senses stopped functioning, his body began to shiver. Very quickly, old age approached and death waited.
Old age.
When Krishna's arm blocked Keshi's throat, all the demon's organs burst open. It seemed that out of grief for the blocked throat, all limbs were obedient to it. Did his life air leave? Thinking that Krishna's arm, which blocked Krishna's throat, was a destroyer of life heirs of the universe? One door named the throat was blocked. We will make many doors so we can get out. This was the thinking of the senses. The senses then made many holes in the body and left. When the life here left the body, similar to a house, Krishna's arm, like a guest, also left the body. Except for the master of the body, the life here, the house was completely destroyed. When Krishna pulled his arm from Kesi's throat, the demon, gleaming like a brahmastra at the time of destruction, attained his actual nature. So that's pretty ghastly scene. Good ending. Good story ending for such a character. Okay.